all the selection you need at exclusive Formula Nissan discounts. It all adds up to April being the best time of the year to drive a new Nissan for less.
We're on the Barry Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut and at FormulaNissan.com. Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Condon. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little late rain out there today, but forecaster Roger Hill promises the forecast will be improving as the week goes on, and we will hold him to that. Thanks for joining us on the program this morning. I want to thank Ken Squire for sitting in for me last week while I was out O-Town. Another one of those valuable vacations where I learned just how incredibly wonderful Vermont is. Spend a little bit of time in Los Angeles. Oh, my gosh. Just, wow, what a madhouse of people. Just millions and millions of people in about the same area that we, Chittenden County. I mean, it's just really scary. So nice to be back and missed you, and great to be back here on the program. We have a great week on tap for you. Coming up later this week, we're going to be talking more about the concept of introverts and extroverts. That'll be coming up on the program on Wednesday. Thursday, we'll talk about that big fight that's coming up with the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. Tomorrow, we'll focus on the Vermont legislature with a couple of crack reporters. We'll be joined by John Walters and Ann Galloway. And we'll be taking your phone calls throughout the week. So let me give you the phone numbers. I do remember them. 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Numbers a little better than names at some point here. All right, thanks for joining us. And we begin the week here on, I think, a really important program and a very serious topic. And when we have Mary Powell on the program here, President and CEO of Greenmount Power, we're usually talking about electric rates, mergers, windmills, things like power from Hydro Quebec, but that is not what we will be talking about today. We'll be talking about something much more different, and I would argue much more important. We're going to be talking about living life. We're going to be talking about contemplating death. We're going to be talking about making what was probably the most difficult decision of Mary's life, and we're going to find out how she made that decision, her decision back in February, allowing a doctor to remove parts of her body, some of the most personal parts of your body that you have, in the hopes of heading off cancer, an operation that was done preemptively, and we'll talk about that decision. More importantly, I think really what we're all here this morning to do, and I certainly would put myself in this category, really is to learn. And that's to learn about how somebody deals with adversity, how they deal with, to learn about strength, to learn about vulnerability, to learn about making decisions, you know, of this magnitude, how you make a decision in the swirl of the emotions, which must have been like an emotional whiteout. So Mary's joining us here this morning. Her family, a long history of breast cancer. And Mary tested positive last fall for a gene, not the same gene that was involved with the actress Angelina Jolie, but she had what wound up to be a similar procedure. And she's here to join us this morning to talk about it. And we are grateful, and I think many people out there listening are grateful that you're here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
First, let's start really, I guess, almost at the end here. Why have you decided to talk about something that's just so personal as this?
That's a great question. And I think probably the most basic answer I can give is that the people who have had the most profound effect on me in my life and the messages that have had the most profound effect have been not when people are necessarily speaking from a sense of, oh, look at what I did, this was so courageous, but actually from people talking very honestly about their most vulnerable moments in life and about how they faced them and how they dealt with it. So this was really informed by the fact that I decided when I was going through this to share openly with the 600 people that work at Green Mountain Power, and the responses that I got just really moved me and really encouraged me that there might be value in speaking even more publicly about the choices I was faced with, the choice I made, and how I'm feeling about it today.
Mm-hmm. What do you see the value of it being?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, let me just say the value, you know, one of the things I didn't anticipate when I shared this was how much value I was going to receive just from connecting so much more honestly and deeply with so many people. So that, you know, it's hard to go anywhere actually these days and not end up having really deep conversations with folks about life choices, about challenges they've faced, about challenges they are facing, and certainly a lot of information about people, what's going on with people in terms of health. You know, one of the other really profound things that happened to me at Green Mountain Power after I shared it, and it could really just choke me up thinking about it, was some first it was some women who approached me that had, you know, equally profound family histories of cancer, and who shared, two in particular, about they were just terrified of knowing if they carried the gene. And they just shared honestly with me about their terror, which I totally understood and identified with, and later shared with me that as a result of my sharing, seeing my process, seeing how strong I feel coming out the other side, decided to go through with getting testing done. Mm. So that's one example. Another example, I mean, they happen to me every single week. A couple line workers have, one in particular had a really challenging issue going on at home, knew that it was probably affecting his safety because he was so distracted and the work they do is so incredibly dangerous, and really just felt like it was so personal that he was having trouble sharing it with his coworkers, even though he knew it would make him safer and probably them safer if he shared it with his coworkers. And he waited for me after this small update meeting I did with a group of folks, and he said that he choked up when I shared my story with them over the teleconference call we had, and that as a result of that, he made the decision to share with his coworkers what was going on with him. Mm. And he was really, obviously felt very relieved that he was able to do that. So those are just a couple of so many conversations that really demonstrated to me the value of sharing our most vulnerable moments and sharing our humanity.
Well, that's some powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. Talk about your family. Talk about your family history. I mean, it's remarkably deep how much breast cancer has affected your family.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say when I was younger, the first death from breast cancer came from a female cousin I had on my mother's side. All of the cancer resides in my mother's side of the family, and she passed away actually at the age of 27 from breast cancer. And later, my mom, as I said in the op-ed, was diagnosed with cancer when I was 19 years old. It started with her as lung cancer, and then she got two different kinds of breast cancer, completely unrelated to each other and unrelated to the lung cancer, and made the decision to remove one breast, and then a number of years later had to remove the other breast. And cancer ultimately took her life about 14 and a half years later. Both of my mom's sisters ultimately died of cancer and had breast cancer. And then I've had my sister was diagnosed a couple of years ago with breast cancer, had a bilateral mastectomy and underwent radiation and all of that treatment. And then I have another cousin who's passed away from cancer and another cousin who's dealing with cancer now, all again on my mother's side of the family.
You wrote about your mother's death and described it really as it was quite painful.
Yeah, absolutely. one of the things that I guess you just don't know, I mean, I love the line, I didn't know what I didn't know, and what I didn't know until I went through it was how profound the loss of a parent is. What I didn't know is that, you know, I think what I expected from a societal perspective, I guess, was that, you know, it would be a few really hard weeks, and, you know, and then I would start to heal, and it would be kind of like this linear process, and then it just would kind of get better every day. And, you know, that really wasn't my experience with grief and loss, and it was profound, and no matter how many years I was ready for it, because in her case, we knew it was coming. It was a really, really hard experience to go through. And what was particularly challenging was, I think on some level, and not surprising given what my mother was, just so attached to her grandchildren. And I think on some level, I thought the fact that she knew I was pregnant with my first child would somehow, that, like, I guess it was a very childlike perspective. Actually, I kind of had this childlike perspective that because she knew I was pregnant, she would make it until my child was born, and that their, as I said, that their skin would actually get to touch. And that didn't happen. And but on the other hand, on the other side of things, it was a gift that I had my daughter growing inside me as I was dealing with the loss of my mom, and then got to deal with the birth of this wonderful human being whose middle name is Bunny, named after my mom.
And you know, pain treatment, this was back a few years ago. I would imagine the pain treatment was not as good and effective as it is today.
In terms of what my mother had to endure, she was an incredibly, incredibly strong woman. That's one of the things I've thought about a lot since I went through this process is, oh my gosh, she went through just, you know, as I described, sort of the horror movie scar from one end of her chest to the other, and losing a major part of her left lung. She lost both breasts. She had bladder cancer. She had surgery to remove that sarcoma. And I honestly just don't remember her ever complaining. I honestly can't believe it. I mean, I remember that it was hard on her, and it was hard on all of us. She just wanted to do her best to muscle through.
You come from a family of three. Your older brother, Michael, and I both worked at the Free Press, started the same day, ironically. You mentioned your older sister, who's in the middle. How's your sister doing today, who has cancer?
She's doing very well. She's doing very well, and she was so incredibly instrumental in my deciding to get this genetic testing done, because she had gotten tested a couple of years ago for the BRCA 1 and 2, which is the major gene that everybody knows about that's tied to breast cancer. And that gene tells you have about an 85% chance of getting breast cancer. And she was so relieved because she got the testing and it showed that she didn't carry it. And then I think it was about 2 months later, she got one of her routine screenings, showed something they didn't like, and sure enough, she had breast cancer. And then that prompted her to get more aggressive in working with the geneticists to look at what was going on. Through her getting a full panel, it's called genetic testing, she found that she had this NBN gene. She then worked with a cousin of mine to have DNA that my aunt had banked tested, and that also had the NBN gene. And so it was really through her kind of dogged research and wanting to understand what was going on with our family that then prompted me to decide that I should get that genetic testing done.
You must have been terrified to even get the test done.
You know, it's funny. I was and I wasn't. I think the part of me that wasn't was because what I talked about is I physically feel like my body type is a little bit more like my dad than my mom. I had come up with all these rationales in my head for why I'm actually more like my dad than my mother. So a part of me, I felt like, you know, I was going to find out I didn't have it, you know. So I think the decision to get the testing didn't feel like the hardest decision. In fact, I had pushed earlier to get the genetic testing, but the genetic counselors didn't feel like there was enough evidence to suggest I should do that. And then when they found the NBN gene, they agreed I should get the testing done. It was more the day I got the phone call, you know, I remember when Wendy McKinnon called me from the genetic screening office up at the hospital. And, it was just a surreal feeling is the best way I can describe it, a surreal feeling. And I had always been, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember being quite cavalier about it, like, oh, yeah, oh, my gosh, if I ever knew I had BRCA1 or 2, I'd definitely do that. You know, it's one thing to say that or think that in theory, and then all of a sudden when you're presented with information, it's amazing how that wall of fear can kind of come up. And it was a bit more of a shock than I was expecting.
Were you at home or at work?
I was at work.
So tell me what happened.
Well, as I recall, I think I just kind of put the phone down and
ran from the room.
Compartmentalized it and moved on with my day. You know, I think that's kind of what I recall. I remember, in fact, it's funny that you asked that because I work in this, as you know, very open space, stand-up desk, you know, in the heaviest traffic part of the building in Colchester when I'm working in Colchester. And I remember just sort of like, okay, do I need to like go to a room downstairs and make some phone calls, or what do I need to do? And I just remember putting down the phone, and I think I had a lot of other things in front of me to do, and I just remember sort of making the decision to park it and move on with my day. And then obviously had conversations with my husband, contacted my sister and my brother, and went from there.
We're talking with Mary Powell. She's the CEO and president of Green Mountain Power. We're talking today about her decision back in February after she tested positive for a gene that indicated an inclination towards breast cancer, and her decision to have prophylactic surgery. You can join us on the program at 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. So you get these results. You've tested positive for this gene. What did it indicate? Because the BRCA 1 and 2 indicate a pretty high percentage that they almost seem to have fixed. What did your gene indicate?
Well, therein lies the challenge that I felt like I faced right away. I feel like on the one hand, I kind of knew ultimately what I was going to end up deciding to do. But on the other hand, you know, I wanted to obviously intellectually and emotionally understand it a little bit more. So I had an appointment with the genetic counseling. I made an appointment with my, breast cancer specialist that I see and talked it through. And I would say both of those conversations were interesting but rather uninformative in the context of what I really wanted was for them to say, okay, Mary, well, when we look at your family history and then we look at this and then we look at that, you know, you should have a prophylactic mastectomy. That's what I really wanted. Or for them to say, you should not. And they didn't say either one. What they said is that they couldn't. I kept saying, well, can you just give me the statistical probability? I said, I live in a world of statistical probability, right? Is it, if it's greater than 50%, I know for sure what I'm doing, you know? And what they could sort of lock and load was that I was probably somewhere in the, at least at a minimum, 30% chance. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. But then they would say, but with your family history and this gene, because this gene hasn't been studied as long as BRCA1 and 2, you are, I think the words they used are, you are a great candidate for prophylactic mastectomy, or to continue very, very high level of screenings. And high level of screenings in my case had already been mammograms, breast ultrasounds, as well as breast MRIs. And I had just had those done within, you know, a reasonable period of time, and they had all said that I was clear. So that's where I was at.
Boy, that's frustrating to hear just in general, too.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, I understand where they're coming from because they also go by data, and the gene just hasn't been studied as long. There was new information coming out on the gene, and it did show a strong link to breast cancer. And so for me, part of the other reason, or the part of the other value I found in sharing my story is I really believe a lot in listening to our gut. You could call it your gut, you could call it your intuition, you could call it whatever you want. I believe we all have this voice that talks to us. Maybe many voices in some days, but we all have this voice, this gut, this feeling about, you know, what the next right action is. And at the end of the day, I would say I knew deep down in my gut that this was the right decision for me. You know, so I'll never forget that day after I had the prophylactic mastectomy, you know, when they got the pathology back and said that actually, shockingly to the doctors, they had found that there was, I was called DCIS positive on both sides. On the one hand, I spontaneously burst into tears and was, you know, kind of, I don't know, shocked is not the right word. I would just say overwhelmed by the information. Because on the other hand, because of my gut, I feel like I was not the least bit surprised. I felt like this was my chance to beat cancer to the punch.
244-1777, that's our local number in Central Vermont. You can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. What options did your doctor give you, though, on this?
Really, the options were to go ahead with the prophylactic mastectomy or to, you know, continued with very heightened screenings. So, and, you know, what comes with heightened screenings these days are a lot of appointments and a lot of follow-up appointments, because I felt like for, you know, out of any given year of screenings, I probably got one or two callbacks a year. So then you're dealing with going back to the hospital, being screened again. So that's, yes, that's what I was facing. I did feel pretty confident that if cancer developed, they would find it, and they would find it early enough that we would be able to deal with it. But having seen what my mom went through with chemotherapy and then seeing what my sister had just faced, you know, a part of my decision was also, if I can avoid that, I'd like to try.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
Had you followed the Angelina Jolie story in the news?
Yeah, I mean, I was very well aware, like the world was a few years ago when she...
What was your reaction when you first heard about it a few years ago before you even got involved in this whole genetic testing world?
I think my reaction was that, because again, I think it's easy to have the reaction when it's not you. So I think my reaction was, oh yeah, if I knew I had that kind of statistical probability, I would do that too. I recall that was my reaction. My other reaction was that I appreciated that she was putting a different face. I feel like she really did put a different face on this decision for women. And she also put a different face on, I think she had some line in there about not feeling like any less of a woman having mm-hmm. gone through the process. And I felt like that was really important too. You know, back in the day when my mom faced this, there was not the kind of surgeries available that we have now. You know, so you were left with, you know, in most cases, pretty horrific scarring that you were going to look at for the rest of your life. You know, one of the tremendous gifts of being able to face this in our time versus back then is that, you know, between the work of really good surgeons who are taking care of the physical side of the removal and the plastic surgeons who do the reconstruction, you know, you can come out feeling just as much as a complete human being as you went in.
Mm-hmm. But allowing somebody to remove part of your body, I can't imagine how difficult that must be. So tell me what that's like.
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, we all deal with things differently. I kind of set my mind on something, and I just look far forward, and I kind of just move ahead. And that's what I was doing. But at the same time, you know, because we're all deeply human, I had many moments. I think the hardest time actually was between making the decision and then waiting. So I had my surgery date, and it was challenging to find between family and work and everything else a time that worked. So the time between making the appointment, which I think I made the appointment in mid-December, and then the surgery was February 4th, that was, you know, just every morning when you look at yourself in the mirror, you know, there's a goodbye process that you kind of go through. And then I remember, it was very emotional.
Wow.
Hugging Mark before the surgery. And even it was because I had talked about it at work. It was also it was very emotional. It was very intense.
So how did you deal with that intervening time? I mean, how were you able to even function during that period of time?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that humans are amazing. You know, I don't think it's just me. I think all of us, you know, whether it's when we face incredible grief and loss, whether it's unexpected illness, whether it's, you know, something going on in our families with challenges. I think that, you know, for me, I gain great strength through the friendships I have, through the relationships I have, and through having many things in life that I have to show up for. And I think those things that we have to show up for really help carry us through, combined with having really good support systems around us, so that we can talk openly about what we're feeling and going through. And mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel lucky, you know, that I work with the group of folks that I do at Green Mountain Power. I mean, it was, and again, because I'm pretty, you know, I'm certainly very transparent. I talked openly about this even on a week-to-week basis in terms of, you know, what was going on. We all tend to share on the team, you know, what's going on for us personally as well as what's going on with work. So I felt like great support.
So, I mean, what's so remarkable to me about this is that I think, you know, if you had a part of your body that was infected or had a disease in it, that the decision to have it removed is easier than if it's something that hasn't quite yet happened. I mean, that's, I think, what makes this different.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It does. It does. I mean, you know, the other thing that weighed in really heavily is I have an 18-year-old daughter. And I described it. You know, my mom's cancer started when I was 19. And, you know, so a huge part of this was I didn't feel like I was just making the decision for myself, you know. And while it is hard, you're right, to face something like that and to say, you know, I'm going to, like, just voluntarily lose a part of my body. You know, when I talked to my husband and my daughter about it, my husband Mark was quintessential Mark, which is just he's just kind of always wants to be there for whatever I decide and really wanted me to feel comfortable making whatever decision I wanted to make. My daughter Alex was a little bit different. It was very clear to her that what she wanted me to do is if I had a chance to kick cancer to the curb, she wanted me to kick it to the curb. So, you know, her response, I remember when I said, you know, Alex, I'm thinking of having this, and she's like, great. Yeah, Mom, absolutely. Why wouldn't you? I mean, that was kind of her response, which my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, why wouldn't that be?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We'll take a short break. We'll come back, continue our discussion. Mary Powell has been kind enough and strong enough to join us here to talk about a remarkable decision she made in her life, and hopefully it may help you at some point, and hopefully you'll never have to make a decision or face this kind of adversity. We'll take a short break. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
This is Roger Williams at 802 Toyota in Berlin, Vermont. At 802 Toyota, you'll find more than just a car, like the highest ranked service department in Vermont and beyond. the genuine Toyota parts to keep your car on the road. Our climate-controlled service drive to keep you and your car warm, dry, and clean. Our focus on finding you the right car at the best price and easy on your budget. And right now, you can save up to $3,000 on all in-stock 2015 Camrys. You'll find 0% financing on Toyota's most popular models, and leases customized to fit your driving needs. 802 Toyota will not lose your business because of price, guaranteed. Come in and find out why we're number one. We're easy to find. Just click on 802toyota.com, call 844-802-TOYOTA, or drive to exit 7 off I-89. We're just minutes off the exit. 802 Toyota, driving to be Vermont's number one Toyota dealer.
Community is our commitment at Northfield Savings Bank. Our continued support of Burlington Discover Jazz Festival is one example. Looking for a community-friendly approach to mortgages? Come to us. Or better yet, we'll come to you. Our mortgage originators will come to your home or office to make the process fast and easy. To get started, go online at nsbvt.com or dial 800-NSB-CASH and ask to speak with an originator. Northfield Savings Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The siding specialists are Cleveland Cedar Products, Route 15 in Wolcott. Siding really makes a house stand out. Ask Henry about half by six B-grade texture side cedar clapboards, plus A-grade clear cedar and vertical grain clear hemlock clapboards at the best price of the season. Have Cleveland's do the most important pre-staining too. Cleveland Cedar, your siding specialists. See them at their Route 15 location in Wolcott or online at cedarguy.com.
The new McMahon Chevy Buick in Morrisville had a record-breaking first quarter. Hi, this is Steve Sace from McMahon.
And I'm Ed Dever, sales manager at McMahon. Right now, you can save thousands because we're matching GM supplier pricing on every new vehicle in stock. That means you get the same deep discounts as GM's largest suppliers on top of all your rebates. We've seen many of our customers getting into brand new vehicles and actually lowering their payment.
And we still have Gas for Junkers going on, where you get a guaranteed minimum trade allowance of $3,000 towards any used vehicle in stock. And we now have GM certified pre-owned vehicles, and McMahon's Import Corner has one of the state's best selections of late model, low mileage imports.
With the matching supplier pricing on every new vehicle in stock, only at McMahon, and the Cash for Junkers deal on every used vehicle in stock, only at McMahon, you've got to check us out. The new McMahon Chevy Buick on the corner of Route 15 and Route 100 in Morrisville.
Find out for yourself why the new McMahon Chevy Buick is growing so fast. The reason is simple. Because at the new McMahon, we make deals the other guys won't. Chevy, find new roads.
All right, we're back. Continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning. Mary Powell is the CEO and president of Green Mountain Power. We've been talking about her decision in, earlier this year to have prophylactic surgery, the removal of her breast to avoid the development of breast cancer. If you have any comments or questions, you are welcome to join us. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. You talked about listening to your inner voice when you made this decision, and I'm totally with you on that. I think, you know, our guts are usually pretty right on. But, you know, in terms of making a decision, so what else did you, what, how else did you make this decision in addition to listening to your inner voice?
It was pretty much listening to that. I mean, and again, I think, Mark, I kind of, like, from the day I got the call from the genetic counselor, I think my gut was already speaking to me loud and clear what I had to do. You know, the other reason I talk a lot about that is, you know, the business I work in is a really dangerous business, you know, for a lot of people that work there. And, you know, we talk every on that company-wide call we have every single Monday morning where I talked about this decision, mm-hmm. we talk about safety. And for me, whether it's safety, whether it's health, whether it's spending time with our kids when we're feeling like we haven't looked them in the eye enough and spent enough time, it's that same gut voice that speaks to us, I believe, around safety, you know, health, safety, and well-being. And, you know, I think that also talking about that every single week with folks at the company also reinforced that part of me that said I got to listen to that gut voice. So I really do feel like that, you know, between that and talking to my, certainly getting the reaction from my daughter and really wanting to do everything I possibly could for her to have, not have the experience that I had, you know, really kind of made it obvious what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm. I hope this doesn't sound trite. What have you learned from this? I mean, you've looked...
I don't really feel like what I've learned as much as how I've grown. I think I've grown immensely from this experience. Because I feel like every time I faced big challenge, I feel like the things that have shaped me the most in my life aren't the things that have gone exceptionally well. It's actually the sometimes our darkest moments. It's the deepest challenges that we faced. Because I think depending on how we choose to face them, if we choose, in my experience, when I choose to face them vulnerably, humanly, what happens is I grow immensely from the experience, and I grow through the deeper connection it gives me to my own humanity and to other people and their humanity. So I feel like, you know, yeah, I don't feel like it's so much what I've learned as much as how much I've grown through this experience.
How have you dealt, there must have been some really dark moments here. How have you dealt with the darkest of the dark moments?
Oh, I cried. I mean, I'm sure that when I think of those really dark moments, you know, but not alone, actually. It's interesting. So, I had some dark moments before. I had some dark moments afterwards. And, you know, I let myself go with different people that loved me. And, you know, usually it involved a hug and some crying. And that seems to have been, again, if I look through, you know, other challenges, you know, whether it's the loss of, you know, having been through the loss of both of my parents, my husband and I lost our home to a fire, actually not long after my mom died, and I was pregnant with my daughter. When I was 7.5 months pregnant, the house burned to the ground.
Oh my God.
And that was, you know, yet again, one of those big challenges in life that I actually grew immensely from, through being vulnerable, through being, you know, available for what was going on and for letting other people into my life around it.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine were there people in your life that came through here that you didn't expect?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would say the overwhelming love and support was just that. It was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. Yep. You know, people, you know, just one young lady just showed up at our house, and we have a small barn with some farm animals. And, you know, it was a rough winter, and but they needed to come in and out every day. And she cleaned stalls, you know, and folks just reached out. Because I think one of the hardest things, I don't know, maybe it's not hard for everybody, but I think one of the hardest things is to ask for help, you know. And it's just hard to say, I need help. And, you know, what was just amazing is how many people just sort of insisted on providing help, even though we might have been sending the message that we were handling everything okay. Uh-huh. So the visits, the calls, the text messages, the, you know, the cleaning of stalls, you know, just the reaching out was amazing.
Okay. But what was it that was meaningful? Was it hearing from people? What was it?
I mean, it was staying connected to people. I would say that is, you know, and again, it's interesting. You said on your show you're going to talk about the difference between extroverts and introverts. So maybe this is I am your classic extrovert. So maybe this
really is
I know, shocking, isn't it? So maybe it's you know, we're all different. But for me, having that contact, and I had a few. I had a number of folks at the office and number of folks in my personal life that were just, you know, texting constantly, reaching out, you know, talking on the phone was not something that was comfortable for a significant period of time. But that constant contact and reaching out was just amazing. Just really amazing.
Was there anything people did that wasn't helpful that might be helpful for us to know?
No, not really. No, I can't. I can't think of anything in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Did at some point you must have had to contemplate your own demise?
Yep. Yep. I think on, you know, though, it's interesting because I think on some level, growing up in the situation I grew up in, so on the one hand, while I was trying to say, oh, I'm physically more like my dad, on the other hand, I realized somewhere, I think in my mid-40s, that I was carrying with me this notion that I was not going to live long. And I remember actually having this great conversation with a guy that I worked with back then, you know, and I think it was around training, when I was training for a marathon, and we were talking about distance and going the distance, and a lot of my drive, I think, came from the fact that I never saw myself with this, you know, incredibly long life. And he said, well, you know, he gave the analogy to running a marathon. He said, well, I think the best way to run the marathon is to envision that you're running 30 miles, not 26. And I think he was right. It helped me tremendously. But he also talked about, well, maybe you ought to start visualizing yourself at 95. And I've been doing that off and on, I would say, ever since. I have this visual of myself, like bowling and like causing trouble and, you know, just being really raucous at 95 years old. But yes, things like this. So I think that the presence of cancer and the loss of so many people dear to me, sort of starting at the kind of, you know, generally speaking, mid-50 mark to sort of the mid-60 mark, always gave me this sense of that this gig doesn't go on for forever. And then having, you know, facing this year certainly drove that home as well.
Gosh, that's so funny. I would think that what you would want to tell somebody who's afraid of a marathon, that, you know, take it sort of 1 mile at a time, not, you know, visualize it's even further than what you're
I should put it in context. It was because we were talking about these training runs I was doing, and I said, I feel like that when I get to that last mile I have to do of my training run, you know, I just peter out. Like, I just, because the end is in sight. And so I just sort of like, you know, I almost figure out, I'll just walk the last. So it was in that context. Okay. He was talking about looking further. And I think that's also where I got the analogy to my own life, too, of looking further, you know, and setting that, you know, setting that distance.
Physically, how are you today?
I feel great. You know, I would say
this is what, 2 months?
Well, February 4th was the major surgery. That's when they do the removal. And then they do this thing where they put these things called tissue expanders under your muscle wall. And they expand that. So that's, you have a procedure that does that expansion process, which was rather painful. And then they do another procedure. For me, it was about, I think, 7 weeks later, where they then switch out what are these tissue expanders for implants, and that's the final part of the reconstructive surgery. So it was February 4th that I had the original surgery, and then it was, you know, whatever, sometime in, I think, the end of March that I had the final. But I would say now I'm back to running, I'm back to yoga. I've been working full-time for quite a while, and I would say that I am at, you know, 95%. You know, after a particularly long day of driving, because you're really using your I never realized what you use your pec muscles for, your muscles, your right. chest muscles for, until I went through this. But after a lot of driving, or after you know, a yoga class or something like that, I certainly will feel a lot of the pinching and pulling you know, a little bit of pain. But overall, I'm feeling great.
Well, some of those positions are a little frightening that you yoga people do. How would you say that you're doing emotionally?
I really feel great. I really do. The fact that I decided to share this so publicly has, you know, been fascinating, because there's not a day that goes by that I still am not having, I would say, pretty deep, meaningful conversations with sometimes people who were complete strangers until we had the conversation, sometimes with people at work, sometimes people in my community. So it brings it up for me all the time, but it brings it up in the context principally of being useful to others. So that part feels really good. In terms of how I'm feeling emotionally around my physical well-being, honestly, I've never felt stronger. I have never felt stronger. It feels so good to know that I did everything I could to kick cancer to the curb. And that is what I feel like I've done in a major part of my body that felt the most vulnerable to cancer.
Have you, I mean, nobody's guaranteed that they're never going to get cancer. So to what degree, you know, have you limited that? I mean, can't the breast cancer sort of, whatever breast cancer comes from, come from, develop in another part of your body?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I do, you know, I eat incredibly well. I take care of myself. So I try to do as many things as I can to be proactive around my health and well-being. I kind of have been like that for a very, very long time. But in addition to that, I follow very stringent screenings. So any kind of screenings that you could imagine that you can get for cancer developing in other parts of your body, I do those screenings.
Mm-hmm. So have you been given any idea? I mean, I know you're somebody that likes percentages. I think I am too. Have you been told that this will lessen the possibility of cancer developing in another part of your body too?
That's a great question. No, I think that, you know, so statistically now I'm kind of like in the 1-2% chance in the breast, because no matter what they do, there's obviously always still some tissue there. So you still have to go for ultrasounds once a year. But for other cancers, I would say, you know, I am in, you know, probably a little bit heightened. So somewhere in the like 18%, 20% category. Versus your average population.
Mm-hmm. And then, so you have to go back still for regular testing on a annual basis, more frequent?
For the breast ultrasound, it's once a year. So I go for that once a year. For, you know, I get my skin checked every single year. I look over my skin. I am on a more heightened screening schedule for colonoscopies. So I have those done as well. And those are kind of the principal things that you need to be doing when you have my kind of family history.
What difference do you think it made when you look back on it, in terms of sort of emotionally accepting all this, that you ultimately did test positive for cancer too?
Yeah. I mean, if I really didn't feel like I needed that to make me feel like I had made the right decision. I really didn't. Like, I would have been fine if they said the tissue was clear and they found nothing. I would not have looked back, and I would have been glad I made the decision I made. But yeah, having that happen certainly just drove home for me the importance of the decision I made, given my family history and, you know, my situation. Also drove home the need for me to continue to be, you know, uber vigilant and to continue to listen to that inner voice around things that don't seem right, and aggressively pursuing anything that does not seem right.
Mm-hmm. Is your inner voice telling you about doing anything differently now in your life?
No. Do you have anything in particular in mind?
No. I mean, you know, you seem like somebody who probably appreciates every day before all this and probably lives your life. I mean, you're pretty active athletically and all that kind of stuff. But
right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I might, how I might react to this. I might decide that I want to do something different, that
right.
I might want to, I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure.
That's a great question, because no, that hasn't dawned on me in terms of, I know, because many people go through things like this and then they make a big change in their lives. And I think one of the things I really feel blessed with is that I'm kind of doing exactly with my life what I would dream to do with my life, which is meaningful work with people I adore, you know, spending time with my daughter and my husband and people I love, and taking care of myself, you know. So I guess if anything, it's just that message of continuing to take care of myself and do everything that I can to, you know, be an example of not just physical well-being, but, you know, I speak very openly in these company conversations we have about the fact that I meditate every morning, you know, that I, you know, that I practice yoga, that I do these things that are around taking care of my complete well-being, you know, physical, emotional, spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Anything in the last 6 months that if you had to do it over again, you'd do differently?
I would have done it even quicker. I mean, that's the only thing. Yeah, I would have. In fact, when I tell my own story, when I sit here with you, the thing that goes through my head is, oh my gosh, almost like what took you so long, Mary? Like if I could replay the tape, I would have gotten tested sooner. I would have scheduled it sooner. I would have done it sooner. So that's, and I think also leaving myself that really long buffer between decision and surgery, I would tighten that right up. I would do it a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. So how does this affect your daughter? I guess, is she predisposed to all of this? Does she now have to get tested all the time?
She's made the decision. We've chatted about it, both my daughter and I have a niece as well who's reached out and chatted with me, and they both have made the decision that they want to get tested. I think, you know, the doctor said my daughter doesn't need to be in a rush about it. She's 18.
Right.
That she's very safe to wait until she's in her 20s. It's kind of really up to her. There isn't any statistical risk in our family with our family history of something coming really soon, except for that one.
Yeah, that one you mentioned right at the beginning. It was
right.
In her 20s.
Yeah, that she was 27. Chrissy was 27. So, you know, I think, you know, Alex has made, you know, what she said to me is, you know, I want to get tested, you know, and then I'll sort of plan around having the same kind of surgery done.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very big part of it. I mean, she wanted to, it was her freshman year in college, and, you know, she was awesome. She wanted to be there. She wanted to, you know, one of the interesting moments afterwards was she asked me if she could see what I look like. And I think the first time was only a couple weeks. Mm. Post-surgery, and, you know, at first, I don't know if it was that protective mom thing, but I was like, oh, no, like, oh, ooh, why do you, you know, and then I thought, no, this is life. This is, and if this is, you know, so we talked about it, and, you know, she's been a very active part of seeing what I'm going through, both literally as well as being there for me emotionally. Yeah.
Yeah. What was it like when you first saw yourself after the surgery?
It's weird. It's surreal. It's a bit surreal. But again, I, you know, as you know, I'm wearing my T-shirt that somebody at work gave me today, which says, yes, they're fake. My real ones were trying to kill me. I also really believe humor. I should mention that because humor for me is a huge part of how you deal with this stuff.
Yeah.
So one of the awkward moments for me was I originally thought I was going to get the whole reconstruction done in one procedure so that I'd basically show up to work and whatever. It would all be kind of put back together. Well, that's not what happened. I got these expanders put in, which meant that I basically went back to work with nothing there on my chest. And, you know, so what I did really was the first thing I did is I just stood up, I twirled around, I put my arms up in the air, and I said, have a look. It's okay. This is where I'm at. You know, and I even joked with folks about, you know, if you want to kind of give me your suggestion on how large or small I should go, feel free, have at it. So tried to bring my humor with me for sure. And
yep. Look now, but then in 10 seconds, you're done.
You're done. Exactly. Exactly.
God bless you for coming in, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Thanks. Important topic.
That'll wrap things up for hour number one. Mary Powell joining us here on the program. We'll be back in just a few moments. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, FM 96.5 in Berry and Montpelier, 101.9 in the Kingdom, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is coming your way next.